fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. They team with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, and Christopher Hart. The American Adversaries, Drive Time.
Yes, we are really, really here. And yesterday it took a power outage to shut us up. But we're back. This is the American Adversaries Drive Time Hour on AM 660, The Answer. And I am Lair Adams, joining you on this beautiful Wednesday. By the way, folks, I am not Swedish. The name is Lair, not Lar or Lars. Just Lair, short for Larry. It's a nickname. Although I've been called much worse. By the way, don't you just love the idea we're going to have to put up with good old boy, just keep your wife and daughters away from him, Billy Clinton, for at least the next 2+ years. He's trying hard to push his wife, destroy Republicans, and especially bring down or tarnish President Obama. Our host knows all about their dumb and feckless feud. Christopher Hart!
All right, but it's a feud that we should thank God for, because that's one of the checks and balances that makes our form of government, the adversarial form of government, the best form of government.
And it's the gift that keeps on giving.
In all of mankind's history. That's why we are the exceptional nation, because we are the exception in the history of human beings. All right, and speaking of being, you are listening to us because we are being on AM 660, The Answer. That's right, we are back up on the air. It was a big power outage here in Altamont Springs
yesterday. It wasn't Ebola? It wasn't ISIS?
I don't know. Never know. You never know. But it was an extensive power outage all over the place here.
Yeah, it wasn't just our operation here, folks.
Yeah, when we were here until after 6 o'clock, just in case, folks. But as I was going home, heading back towards downtown Orlando.
How far it went.
Down to Maitland Boulevard.
That far?
Down to Maitland Boulevard.
Folks, if you don't live around here, that's a long way.
Yeah, on 434. So just north of Maitland Boulevard there is when I started seeing lights and businesses back open again. All right, but we are back open. We are in business. It is Drive Time, and that means you are listening to the American Adversaries coming to you live from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studio. Don't forget, for the best in Mercury Free dental, call my friend Dr. James E. Hardy at 407-678-3399. Now, if you want to be a part of tonight's show, give us a call at 407-774-8255. We had lined up for you a guest last night, John Wallstetter. He's been on the show before talking about nuclear proliferation. So we moved him to today. But today, we also had a guest lined up for you today, and he's in the studio with us right now. So I'm going to get right to him, Steve Gushoff of the Liberty Council. Once again, thanks for being back on the show, Steve.
It's always a pleasure, guys.
All right. Monday, the Supreme Court, as I said, Jean-Paul Sartre said, if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. The Supreme Court announced. And was this unusual on the first day of the session for them to make an announcement of this magnitude that they were not going to hear these five cases which allowed same-sex marriage?
It is unusual because, to kind of follow up on what Sartre said, inaction is action. And
right.
So it's been a crazy week, because it's been a week filled with inaction, but then some action. If you look back at Monday, I mean, the Supreme Court, you know, they notified everyone that they were turning away appeals from five different states looking to prohibit gay marriage, same-sex marriage: Indiana, Oklahoma, Utah, Virginia, Wisconsin. And they were, so gay marriage was going to be able to go forward in those five states, as well as six others: Colorado, Kansas, North Carolina, South Carolina, West Virginia, and Wyoming. Then yesterday in California, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco, ironically enough, they said that any ban on same-sex marriage in Idaho and Nevada was unconstitutional, which would seemingly allow same-sex marriage to go forward in those two states as well. Then this morning, Justice Kennedy of the Supreme Court stayed those rulings concerning Idaho and Nevada, which meant that same-sex marriage could not go forth in those two states. Then this afternoon, Kennedy said, wait a minute, I meant only Idaho. Only Idaho the stay is for, because the Idaho Attorney General was the only one that appealed, not Nevada. So as we speak right now, who knows, there could be more changes before the end of the show. But since Monday, the Supreme Court did nothing, which allowed same-sex marriage to go forward in those various states I just mentioned. But it has been stayed in Idaho. So if you're, you know, wanting to get married and you're a same-sex couple in Idaho, you can't do it. And none of this affects Florida.
Until Justice Kennedy did this, it was my opinion that the justices had decided that they were going to wash their hands of this entire issue. But this kind of throws new light on it.
To some extent, you know, there's a lot of mystery to this. In other words, a lot of people on both sides were very unhappy that the court did what it did or did not do anything. I mean, you had proponents.
Now, wait a minute. You're telling me that people who were for gay marriage were unhappy the other day?
Absolutely.
Why?
Because they want the court to take up this case, and they want the court to rule for all 50 states that same-sex marriage is allowable and constitutional, and that any ban is unconstitutional.
Well, in essence, isn't that what the court did?
No, because it doesn't affect all 50 states.
But let's presume that district courts in these other states, like Florida, will go along with the non-decision and say, well, they're saying let's go ahead and allow gay marriage.
If the time comes where every single court of appeals, you know, covering all 50 states, render decisions in support of same-sex marriage, then, yeah, the Supreme Court may do nothing. They may just be waiting for that. It may be like a four-corner offense, you know, in college basketball,
sure,
to some extent, where it's just delay. But it's unknown. You know, at the same time, like I say, there's a decision that everyone is awaiting from the Sixth Circuit Court in Cincinnati, which is a little bit of a toss-up in terms of how the justices will decide there, if they will affirm same-sex marriage or not. And if that court in the Sixth Circuit in Cincinnati rules against same-sex marriage, then you may see the Supreme Court take this case up. Why? Because at that point, you'll have discrepancies amongst different courts of appeal, federal courts of appeal across the U.S. Florida is in the 11th Circuit. So again, Florida is not at all involved in what happened on Monday or yesterday. And so Florida needs to wait until the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals at some point decides this issue as well. So you still have different cases out there, decisions and cases out there, before all 50 states are affected.
Okay, one quick question as a matter of law, and then Lair has a question for you. These circuit courts in Florida, like South Florida, like the one in Miami, who have ruled that the Florida constitutional amendment violates the federal constitution, won't those eventually end up in a federal district court?
I would say yes, because they involve federal constitutional issues.
Okay.
So that's where it'll probably wind up, at the Federal Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit in Atlanta.
Okay.
All right, Steve, let me ask you this, and you may not be able to answer. Do you know if there's any statistics available that'll show whether or not the pro-gay marriage movement is still growing, or has it kind of peaked out?
Actually, I just saw a statistic today that it has peaked out and actually is in decline very recently. Before this past week and these issues came down, gay marriage support had been rising over the course of several years. And so a recent statistic had it up as high as 55% of Americans supposedly supporting same-sex marriage. A new poll that came out had it at 49%. So it has dropped 6 points recently. And I think a lot of people are seeing this, you know, from a different framework now. They're seeing that this is a religious liberty issue, and that it also affects the definition of marriage in many ways from a slippery slope standpoint. And I've used that phrase before on this show, where, look, if you allow same-sex marriage, then anything goes. If you have anything beyond one man, one woman, and you want to allow same-sex marriage, then you're going to have to allow polygamous relationships as well. You're going to have to allow adult incestuous relationships as well, because the crux of the same-sex marriage argument is we're adults, we're consenting, we love each other,
we
should be allowed
to
get married.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have two men or two women that feel that way, well, what about if it's three or four or five or six? You know, I know that polygamists are cheering and very happy that same-sex marriage has this momentum, because they see themselves as next is going to be able to have the right to engage in polygamous marriages. What if you have a situation where you have an adult brother and sister? They say we're adults, we love each other, we're, it's consensual, we should be able to get married as well.
Well, what about this? I know, but and I can see this coming. What if the parents of, say, a 14 or 15-year-old boy, I know that kind of fits in the certain state's guidelines there, if the parents sign off, if they want to allow him to get married to an older man?
That would probably be deemed allowable, because right now in certain states, if you are a minor but your parents, you know, mm-hmm. allow you to mm-hmm. get married, then you can do so. So if same-sex marriage was allowed in these same states, then I would assume that, yes, if the parents sign off on a same-sex marriage between an adult and a minor, it would probably be allowable.
All right. Yesterday, Monday, Matt Staver, who is the founder of Liberty Council.
I know him well.
Yes. he was sounding pretty gloomy on the news reports. Does this portend bad news for people who are for traditional marriage?
Well, the same-sex marriage proponents have all the momentum right now. In other words, if you look back over the past year.
In the legal arena, it's still yet, anyway.
Yeah, and particularly, and I heard Matt on the station on the news, you know, talking about the inaction by the Supreme Court and how it was really a dereliction of their duties. And so if you favor traditional marriage, and it really chagrins me to have to use that adjective, traditional, in front of the word marriage, but that's where we are these days. But it was very disappointing, you know, that the Supreme Court decided to punt. I said before about how pro same-sex right. advocates were disappointed that they didn't issue a ruling. Well, obviously, so were all of us who support traditional marriage, because we want the Supreme Court to hopefully take this case and understand that states have rights to define marriage as they want.
All right. Wasn't this maybe also a case of be careful what you wish for, because we as conservatives are constantly saying we don't want the judicial making law. And essentially what the justices, didn't they basically reaffirm the 10th Amendment, states' rights?
Well, no, because what you're having, you know, particularly at the state court levels, you know, in Florida right. and at these various federal courts where they have ruled in favor of same-sex marriage, they're trampling that. They're
exactly.
overriding the will of the people right. in Florida and about 30 other states across the nation.
Right. So it is not a states' rights
Correct.
Issue, if anything, but...
Well, it is a states' rights issue.
I mean, not a states' rights
decision.
They trampled
on states'
yeah, not
rights.
States
Correct.
Right. Yeah, right.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. It's anything but that. All right, we've got to go take the first break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by John Wohlstetter, and he's got a great article out. It's called, Who Are We at War With and Who Is a Threat? Boy, I got a whole list that I could go down with this fella. He's got a blog called Letter from the Capitol, so check him out.
And Stick we're up. Here with Steve Gushoff, so do not go away.
All right, welcome back to the show. That's right, folks. You are listening to the American Adversaries. It is drive time on AM 660, The Answer, where you are guaranteed to get the good, the bad, and the ugly every night of the week, excluding Saturday night. We are live at 5. 407-774-8255 is the number. Christopher Hart, Lair Adams in the studio with you, along with Steve Gushoff of the Liberty Council. And we're going to go to our guest now, who we tried to get on yesterday, but with the power outage, we couldn't do much of anything but just sit around and talk amongst ourselves, that is. So tonight we want to welcome to the show a fellow who's been on the show before. He's the author of a book called Sleepwalking with the Bomb. I love that title. He also has a blog site called Letter from the Capitol. He's written an article entitled Who Are We at War With and Who Is a Threat? So I'd like to welcome to the show this afternoon John Wohlstetter. John, thanks for coming back on the show with us.
I'm delighted to be with both of you and with your audience.
Well, thank you, sir. We appreciate it. Dr. Wohlstetter, let me ask, what do you mean, who are we at war with? Isn't it quite obvious?
Well, it should be, but we have a president who, less than 2 weeks ago, on 60 Minutes, told Steve Croft that we're not at war with ISIS. Well, you know, this is rather odd when one thinks about it. After all, we, at the time that he was saying that, we had been, for a couple of months or so, we have been dropping bombs on them, using warplanes to drop war munitions. Now, this, if it isn't a war, it's a pretty good imitation of one.
Well, I thought that was supposed to be a humanitarian effort of sorts, if you will.
Well, it was, this is like overseas contingency operations sending drones after terrorists.
Yeah.
man-caused disasters describing terrorist attacks,
yeah,
workplace violence, and so on. The administration has more doublespeak than one could find in George Orwell.
Lair likes to say that a lot around here. You're absolutely right about that. But isn't there, if you will, a nugget of truth in what the president said, in that we're not at war with ISIS? Because, in fact, it's much bigger than ISIS, isn't it?
Well, it doesn't make it is bigger than ISIS. On the other hand, that would be like saying we're not at war. We're at war with Germany, but not Italy in World War II. We're at war with both of them,
right?
Because they were allied together. There is a loose confederation out there, and there are other groups that are not in any way allied outside of Al Qaeda. This is an extension of Al Qaeda, really, a franchise operation or what have you. Then there are other groups which we are also at war with that the administration doesn't get, such as Hezbollah and Hamas. And the main idea behind my article, as far as the who are we at war with, is that we need to recognize that when people are at war with us, we're not at peace with them,
right,
even if we hope for peace,
right,
rather foolishly in the case of some of these situations. And I proposed in the article that we had a Congress declare war pretty much automatically when anybody declares war on us. Now, you know, if it's the Duchy of Grand Fenwick, to borrow from an old Peter Sellers movie.
Right, yeah.
Unless they have the Q-bomb, you don't worry about them.
Right.
Declare war. But you have here a terrorist group that was aiming to control territory we had previously occupied. The occupying that was conducting with extreme brutality its operations. Parenthetically, Al-Qaeda, the original Al-Qaeda, isn't at all horrified by what they're doing. They just think it's bad PR at this point. They shouldn't be thought of as being any different in their viciousness or indifference to human life or contempt for their adversaries. The thing is that it's very hard to effectively prosecute a war if you don't have the flexibility you have in wartime. You look at things as legal matters. You know, you have bin Laden, who declared was at war with us, and we could have picked him up in Sudan, and because the Sudanese leader offered him, Hassan al-Turabi offered him to us in 1996.
Yep, several times.
We said, no thanks, we don't have a prosecutable case. Well, the next 15 years were very unhappy history because we had made that choice. Now, of course, if we'd made it, just like had Hitler been stopped in the Rhineland in 1936 by the British and the French, a lot of stuff wouldn't have happened, and you'd have all sorts of learned articles written by people or commentators who said it wasn't necessary, and there wasn't that big a threat. And if we had hit ISIS around the time they were making trouble around Fallujah in February, when they were a much smaller organization, we would have said, hey, this was not necessary.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, Leon Panetta is saying essentially the same thing. He said, when they took Fallujah, you know, we should have known exactly what was going on. This president, you know, either was asleep or is, you know, lying to people when he says that the intelligence wasn't there. Also, isn't what the president is doing now, irregardless of the declaration of war, isn't his quote-unquote strategy too little, too late?
It is. I just saw some numbers on the web that compare what Bush did in Enduring Freedom and in the first of that Afghan operation.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first the 75 days of that before the initial collapse of the resistance and bin Laden running for the hills and unfortunately making it.
Yeah.
We launched something like 6,500
sorties.
Sorties in the 75 days.
Yeah.
And
including B-52s fully loaded with 500 pounders.
Yeah. And 500 pounders. We dropped much bigger stuff than that.
Well, up to 2,000 pounders out of those B-52s.
We dropped all sorts of stuff on them. I'm trying while we're talking to pull that thing up because I think it's important to see what is going on. And here we are. Here, I've got the numbers right here. It's from Commentary Blog. Had a helpful post today on why Max Boot and why Kobani might fall. During 75 days from October 7th, 2001 to December 23rd, the 6,500 strike sorties were flown, out of which 17,500 munitions were dropped and more than 120 fixed targets fallen, and so on. Now, the statistics in 59 days from August 8th, when the campaign started, to October 6th, 360 strikes using 955 munitions. Now, you know, this is 5%, roughly 5% as much, and it's in a little, you know, it's in almost as many days, say four-fifths as many days. So you have it's much more than 10 times, more like about 15 times as much. And that is understating because, of course, you have a much heavier, you pointed out, heavier munitions. We had the B-2, the B-52 was involved in that a great deal. So you have a situation where he is, you there?
Yes, sir. Larry Adams here. We are actually coming up on a hard break.
Okay.
And just a quick question I want you to maybe think about during the break. I mean, you're right. I agree with you. This president seems to be doing everything he can to stay out of war. But my problem is, he's the main guy that seems to be putting this nation at war with itself. Any comments on that?
Well, nation at war with itself, I'm not sure where the question is coming from.
Well, I'm just trying
he's
to...
such a divisive leader. He's...
Exactly.
Oh, yes. Well, he is a very divisive leader, and he is far from being a uniter, as Bush tried to be unsuccessfully. He doesn't even try, and he spends most
of the time... He exacerbates the problem.
Most of the time he rails at his clerk.
Yeah, and it's making it harder to deal with this war, I believe, is where Larry's going with that. All right, John Wohlstetter, stay with us through the break, and we appreciate you talking with us. By the way, you can read John's stuff at Letter from the Capitol, his web blog. Don't go away. You're listening to the American Nat Series.
Hey, it makes you feel like putting your socks down and getting a hula hoop, right? Oh, well, that's kind of the music. That's it. Anyway, we'll be right back, folks, right after the news.
Here is tonight's American Adversaries Soundbite RX News Minute. SoundbiteRx.com, a great way to be better informed. Today's Soundbite RX News Minute is brought to you by My Liberty Threads. American made, America proud. MyLibertyThreads.com.
Hi, this is Christopher Hart once again for SoundbiteRx.com with just a little taste of the medicine you'll find brand new today at Soundbite. Leon Panetta, that's right, the former Obama White House official is, making a lot of waves for the Obama White House. And it's getting personal. If you want to see, just go to soundbiterx.com. They have a great article there today about that. Also this, it's an article showing the history of the White House incompetence. How they ever got it onto one website, I have no idea. I'm sure it required a lot of space, storage space, but you can read it at soundbiterx.com today. And the seven reasons why no one trusts President Obama, where did it come from? That's right. We'll get old Chipmunk Todd. That's right, Chuck Todd, the new host of Meet the Press on Sunday mornings, has got the seven reasons why no one trusts the president. Pretty interesting. You'll find brand new today. Harry Reid. That's right. Good old Harry Reid. Dirty Harry Reid, we call him around here. He's at a new low with his poll numbers. Maybe a lot of people see that his divisive ways are unproductive as well as are the president's. Also this, the Oklahoma City beheading terrorist. That's right. More about that thank you note that the president sent to his congregation at his mosque. Thank you for helping prevent terrorism. Boy, bad timing there. Also this, there has been an explosion at a nuclear plant in Iran. Accident? Sabotage? I can only say I hope it's sabotage. Give them a taste of their own medicine is what I say. Folks, for a taste of some good medicine, go to soundbiterx.com. It's good medicine. We'll be right back. We got another big old sexy hunk in the studio with us today in the personality and person of Steve Gushov of the Liberty Council. Don't believe me? go to Ustream.tv, and you'll be able to see just for yourself. Go to Ustream.tv and type in the American Adversaries, and you will see us, and you can also chat with us through the box there. And you can't see John Wohlstetter, but I'm sure he's a sexy hunk of a man as well, so let's get back to him right now. John has written a book called Sleepwalking with the Bomb. He also has a blog called Letter from the Capitol. You can also follow him on Twitter at John Wohlstetter. That you spell that W-O-H-L-S-T-E-T-T-E-R. And he's written an article entitled Who Are We at War With and Who Is a Threat? And, John, I want to get back to that, but real quickly, in regards to the book that you wrote, and I don't know if you heard our little soundbite news minute, but there's a story out where there was a mysterious explosion at a nuclear plant in Iran. Any ideas on who or what may have caused that there explosion?
No, I don't. There are several possibilities, obviously. But I think we have to be very careful here.
How so?
If you think, for example, in terms of Stuxnet, you would have to, from what we know of Stuxnet, it's been publicly revealed, so I can, you know.
That's the computer virus.
Yeah, in the 2010. That was one where they got in using SneakerNet. Somebody snuck it in on a thumb drive or something because the facility was not physically connected to the outside Internet directly. So that probably would have to be the case here. It's not impossible. It could be an accident. We should know, of course, if it were anything that we did.
Yeah. All right. I want to get back to your article. Who are we at war with and who is a threat? We kind of talked about the first part of it, and the second part, who is a threat, kind of goes to where I was sort of leading with my question in saying that it's bigger than ISIS. Isn't the real threat Islamic fundamentalism in general, and all of these different groups are just various, as Benjamin Netanyahu said, various branches of the same tree?
Well, I think Netanyahu is right. Look, back in 2001, the Deputy Secretary of State, Colin Powell's deputy, Richard Armitage, said of al-Qaeda, they may not even be the 18. Hezbollah may be terrorism's 18. And Hezbollah has for 20 years had a presence in American cities. In 1994, Stephen Emerson, the brilliant anti-terror guy, had a special on PBS where they went into a lot of these places and found fundamentalist militant Islam sects and cells in major cities all across America then. So they're here. Those are, there are plenty of them around.
And so you're saying not only is the threat existential, in other words, outside the United States, but within the United States as well?
Yes, of course. And this, and what makes this particular one disturbing is, of course, that some of the people who are going over there to fight for ISIS are people who come from here, and they know how to get around here. They're not going to be so easy to spot.
So, in other words, because they'll have experience with this society and passports, that they'll be able to bypass the security.
Well, not only that. If they get stopped on a traffic pullover, they know how to behave. If they are at an airport, they don't look like a deer in the headlights. What am I doing here? As though some of the signage is so bad, I found myself feeling that way after over 50 years of flying. But there are telltale ways that people who are foreigners stand out, and experienced observers can notice that.
Right, and such as the Israeli security at their airports.
Well, yeah, Israeli security is much more comprehensive. First of all, when you come in and you stand online, that's the time they should start interrogating you, not wait until you... They won't interrogate everybody. They'll look at people.
Yeah, but, Doctor, that's politically incorrect. Yeah.
Well, Eric Holder wants to outlaw any kind of profiling. This is something that we may not be able in this country until if and when we get hit to be able to do.
Yeah.
If enough people get killed, enough of the rest of us are going to be able to say to those who are saying this, we need to do some profiling. All profiling is composite. Nobody profiles by one factor alone.
Right.
If you have a 90-year-old man or woman with a walker, you don't figure they're going to try and take over the plane. And if you have an infant, you don't. So you use age as one way, behavior is another. If they're quoting Osama bin Laden, you'd be a little more concerned than if they were singing Irving Berlin.
Right. And, of course, where their passport has been stamped might come into play there as well.
Yeah.
I would hope that it would. Given that we have a president who is in a state of denial, and he has come up with a strategy that, to me, it was just a strategy to say he had a strategy. It wasn't a strategy really to accomplish anything. Don't we risk actually making the enemy stronger via his strategy rather than weakening the enemy?
Sure. It is said in courtrooms, every failed cross-examination reinforces direct. You get up there to cross-examine a witness, jury expects to see some results. In some ways, it is almost like the ancient fable about Hercules when he rescued Antaeus, who was a wrestler who got, when he was thrown to the ground, he became 10 times stronger. So Hercules, when he realized this, finally picked him up and strangled him in the air. And the thing is that if we fail, they're going to get more recruits, because Bin Laden explained that back in the 90s, people prefer a strong horse to a weak horse. Had Obama come out and bombed these guys when they were out in the open without advertising in advance,
right,
that's where a declaration of war gives you a little bit of surprise, because you declare it and then maybe months go by before you do anything. You're just clearing the decks for action.
Right. Real quickly, in terms of declaration of war, the president doesn't have to request that from Congress, does he?
No, Congress could declare
they have
war
the power
on its own.
Right. Why haven't they done so, do you
think? Well, for one thing, they don't trust this guy with the power, I don't think. The other thing is declarations of war make people nervous. And Americans, they like the hope for peace.
We're war weary.
It's a wonderful thing. But in any event, to go back to the other point there,
sure.
If we caught them in the open in a when they were much smaller and we destroyed a third or half their stuff overnight or something, or in 2 or 3 days, 1,000 sortie strikes.
Right.
Could you imagine a recruiter going into a madrasa the next day somewhere in one of the Muslim countries saying, "Hey, guys, come on, join up with us. We lost 1/3 of our force last night, but we're really ready to go," versus the Americans dropped bombs and didn't hurt us. Who do you think is going to get more? Which line is going to get more recruits?
Right.
So, yes, of course it will make them stronger.
Yeah, and then, of course, you have the beheadings that come into the mix as well. You know, Henry Kissinger said on Fake the Nation a couple of weeks ago that, the first time when Foley was beheaded, the first beheading, we should have, without announcing, as you said, just launched the B-52s, just basically put everything in the sky over there and just leveled them at that point. And sending not only a message to ISIS, but to the rest of the world, this is what happens when you do this to an American citizen.
Yeah, but this also raises another question, which I wrote a piece on Gaza and the guns of August 1914, talking about our values. And a terrorist use our values against us, our regard for human rights. That's why human life. That's why Human Shields won at least a propaganda war for Hamas, incredibly, because a lot of people in the West saw those terrible pictures of children being bombed and forgot why the children were there and that they weren't being targeted. And the thing is that the terrorist groups know now that they can put us in a position where we have to do something. We really are not up to doing, and I'm afraid that unless we get hit much harder than we have been, which I certainly don't want to see, that we won't really be up to the task of doing that. And when you don't do that, you're fighting on their terms.
Yeah, absolutely, and fighting with both hands tied behind your back.
I mean, nobody likes collateral casualties.
That's right.
No civilized person. They love it, of course.
Yeah.
But now you have a situation, this town of Kobani, where they're setting up for a slaughter, and it will be a massacre right out of the Crusades.
Yeah, I believe it's already started, if you're talking about the town on the Turkish border.
Well, yeah, they were getting there on the outskirts,
yeah.
And we are doing nothing.
Right.
This for the Kurds, who are our best allies among all the people there in the territories that we have that had been occupied, had occupied at one time. They're the part of Iraq. They were passionately with us. The Syrians would want to be with us, Syrian Kurds. We should be trying to create a Kurdistan. Instead, we're shoving the Kurds back into the countries they were in because this administration has no strategic imagination whatsoever.
Oh, come on, doctor. Now, this president is so smart. Now, he's smarter than these people out there that are experienced with this sort of stuff, you have to understand.
Well, this president is too smart for his own good and ours.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm afraid of.
Like my dad used to say, he's too big for his britches.
Well, he knows just enough to get us into trouble and not enough to get us out of it.
You're absolutely right about that. There is
and
no,
does not have the will.
Yeah, there's no question about that.
Oh, I think this disappears after the election, within a week or two.
Yeah, I believe you're absolutely right. This never was meant to do anything. It was only meant to look like he was doing something. Back here when I was a kid in high school and we were running around with the hot rods and stuff, we called a car that had it looked good but didn't go anywhere, all show and no go.
Yeah.
And that's what this president is. He's absolutely all show and no go. John, I also want to ask you this. Presuming this president just continues to plot along like this, isn't he basically guaranteeing that at some point along the line there will be, I know there already are, but in much larger terms, numbers, boots on the ground, American boots, allied boots, if you will, on the ground?
I don't think he's prepared to do that.
Not necessarily him, but the next guy who comes along or the next gal.
This thing, first of all, could be over this phase before, this is more than 2 years. This phase could be over before another president gets in there, and then you have to look at it from an entirely different thing.
Yeah.
But it would certainly, I mean, the thing is, he's not even testing what an air campaign can do because he's dropping only a fraction, less than 10% of the tempo that we are capable of. And so why would we consider this even a market test of what an air campaign could do to slow them up?
Yeah. Well, you
wanted to get them out in the open before they get close to cities for all the obvious reasons.
Well, sure. Absolutely. All right, John, we're going to have to keep an eye on this, and we'll get you back in the future to talk about it more. And we appreciate you being on with us tonight, especially considering the delay from last night.
Well, I'll have more on this stuff on Letter from the Capitol. I'll be covering this question of the air campaign tomorrow. Okay. That's OL, and that's a one-stop shop for all my stuff, my Twitter page, my articles, my books, etc. Great to be with you, and thanks to your audience for tuning in.
Okay, what's that site again?
Letter from the Capitol, OL. Google it or www.letterfromthecapitol.com. It's a one-stop shop for my stuff.
All right. Thank you, John. We appreciate you being on with us.
Both.
Okay. Okay, folks, that's John Wohlstetter. And as you said, you can go to Letter from the Capitol, Google it, or go to letterfromthecapitol.com, and you can also follow him on Twitter at John Wohlstetter, Wohlstetter.
You know, Chris, there is one thing Barack Obama is a success at. He is a success at being a failure.
All right. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation, and we'll pick it back up with Steve Gushoff of the Liberty Council. Don't forget, you can watch us on Ustream.tv, thanks to Lucas Paris and his head cam.
It's all Bush's fault.
Yeah. All right, that's right, folks. The boys are back on the air. I'm sorry if you tuned in last night and didn't find us here.
We weren't on the air.
We were here in the studio. We just didn't have any juice to power that big old transmitter out yonder with.
We didn't have power for lights. When you went to the bathroom, I was in the dark.
All right. You usually are. But anyway, that's okay, folks. You're listening to The American Adversaries. When he's in the bathroom, that is. You're listening to The American Adversaries. It's drive time on AM 660. The answer, 407-774-8255 is the number. We've got Steve Gushaw from Liberty Council. By the way, you can find out what they're doing over there. And they have a congressional scorecard and voters' guides that you can find at lc.org. If you want to help them out over there at Liberty Council, lc.org is where you'll find them. All right, I want to go to Rick. He has a comment, then we'll pick up Nostradamus with the conversation. Rick, thank you for calling.
Hey, guys. Great show so far.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make an observation about progressives and the president. Progressives are people with opinions who believe that they are smarter than those with experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's about the
good
size
point.
Of
Very
it.
Very good point.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And even Leon Panetta talks in his book how President Obama likes to be the professorial type, you know, the one with all the big theories and opinions. And, of course, he sets himself higher than
all,
us, all us working stiffs out here. All right, thank
and
you.
And yet has nothing to show for it.
Yeah, except a lot of pain and misery on our part. All right, thanks a lot, Rick. We appreciate you being out there very much. All right, let's grab Nostradamus. Did we drop Nostradamus? Did we lose him?
No, sorry.
Okay, all right. Nostradamus, you be there?
Here I am. I was doing an invitation to yesterday's show for a second. There, I'm back now. Okay.
Well, Nick said that yesterday was a really good show.
It was.
Had a lot of substance.
Guys, yeah. I tried to tune in yesterday. I thought you had a couple of mimes as guests.
You guys used a word in the first half of the show that's one of my favorite words. Sortie. It sounds like a French pastry. I feel
it's sortie. It sorta does. Huh?
What's it? Doesn't it?
Yeah, it sorta does. All right, I know you got a story. I want you to give us that story. We've got another caller who has a comment for Steve, and I want to get Steve's comments on the story that you got.
Okay. So me first. Okay.
You first.
If you want to read along, if you go to our Facebook page at American Adversaries, I put up a post, a link to the post by Russell Moore, Ph.D. for the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, from a website, gospelproject.com. And it's an interesting take on politics and the kingdom of God. You know, a lot of people think that if you are a person of faith, you should have nothing to do with politics. And Dr. Moore seems to believe that rather than just withdraw from the public square and focus on the gospel in our own lives, ignoring political issues does not lead to a less politicized church, but to a more political church.
Matter of fact, go ahead.
One cannot preach the gospel in 19th century America, he writes, and not address slavery without abandoning the gospel. And one can't preach the gospel today without addressing the sexual revolution without abandoning the gospel. Silence, he says, baptizes the status quo.
Well, Nostradamus, I mean, what you're saying is exactly what we're doing at Liberty Council. Our biggest initiative this year in 2014 in advance of the midterm elections is something we're calling the Pastors and Patriots Initiative, where we're basically encouraging pastors all across this nation to become more like Peter Muhlenberg and the Black Robe Regiment. We need pastors to get out there and to be vocal and be bold in the pulpit and not be concerned about how big their congregation is or whether or not they're the biggest church on the block or the most popular, whatever, but that this nation is in decline because the pastors are doing nothing. They're being silent from the pulpit, and when the pastors are silent, then the parishioners will be as well. And so that goes right along with what you're saying. Pastors have to do more. It's a self-inflicted wound in this nation by what calls itself the Christian church that's doing absolutely nothing, or even worse, they're basically just trying to go along to get along and doing things like supporting same-sex marriage, supporting abortion, etc., because they just want to be liked and popular in the community.
And I think that what Russell Moore is saying is even beyond the pastors, that Christians have a responsibility to be involved if you are a Christian.
Exactly. But again, it stems a lot of this from the pastors. If the pastors are active and involved, then you're going to see the parishioners in that same church involved as well. I'll give a wonderful example. I attend St. Andrew's Chapel in Sanford, where R.C. Sproul and Bert Parsons are the co-pastors, and they are both very bold and very vocal in speaking out against abortion and speaking out against homosexuality. And I know that there are many people in St. Andrews that are very activist in politics as well. If the pastor is activist, the parishioners will be. If he's not, they won't be.
All right. And, of course, that's what Rafael Cruz is all about.
Absolutely.
And I hope that that continues your efforts anyway, beyond the midterm.
Obvious it is the best way to protect religious freedom.
Absolutely, because if you don't do anything, then you're going to lose those freedoms.
Yes.
Look, it's very easy. You know, and a lot of times people think, oh, you're being a bad Christian testimony if you're fighting all these battles. No, it's the exact opposite. The Apostle Paul in the New Testament, when he had problems in Rome, he relied on his legal rights as a Roman citizen to get him out of trouble. Well, it was good enough for the Apostle Paul. It's good enough for Christians today in the USA in 2014.
All right. Nostradamus, any last words before I let you go?
Yeah, Steve, how much weight would you give to the idea that a lot of pastors and a lot of priests in the Catholic Church don't speak out boldly, number one, for fear of losing their audience, but number two, for fear of losing their tax-exempt status as a church.
Well, here's a very fast history lesson. No church in the history mm-hmm. of the United States has ever lost its tax exemption. We hear that all the time from pastors and priests, and they're afraid of that. And so that's part of what we're doing with the Pastors and Patriots Initiative, is educating pastors that they have nothing to fear in that regard, that they, you know, that no church has ever lost its tax exemption ever in the history of the U.S. And even beyond that, even if that were to happen at some point in the future, so what? Are you going to quit being a pastor and close your church just because the government does something negative against you? Is that the extent of your commitment to your church and your parish?
Yeah, it's a small price to pay, if you ask me. All right, thanks, Dr. Dennis. Got to let you go. Just about out of time. All right, let's go real quickly to Al. Al, I'm up against the clock, so please make your question or comment for Steve Gushov straight to the point. Al, are you with us? Did Al fall? Okay. All right. Al is not with us. But Steve, Cal Thomas made an article. You can see what time we have left, so obviously I'm sort of blindsiding you. But Cal Thomas made some comments this morning on Salem Communications, basically saying that, you know, we get all bent out of shape about gay marriage, but isn't, and basically the thrust of his argument is, isn't Christians cohabitating outside of marriage and the divorce rate amongst Christians more destructive to marriage, if you will, than same-sex marriage?
Well, anything outside of the guidelines of what the Bible and what God has prescribed for sex and for marriage is wrong and is going to lead to the decline of this nation. And John MacArthur, a well-known pastor in California, has said that, look, it's like, yes, I mean, homosexuality is a sin. The Bible is very clear on that. And so Christians cannot support same-sex marriage. But at the same time, if heterosexual Christians are engaged in adultery or fornication, they're fooling around with their secretary, whatever, that's just as bad. In other words, sexual sin is sexual sin, whether it's homosexual sin or heterosexual sin.
Right. So your argument is both and.
Not a big distinction,
Correct. Cal was sort of saying either or. Yours is, this argument is both and. Very well handled in a very short period of time. So, Steve, thanks for coming in today, and obviously we're going to have you back throughout the session. And once again, folks, you can get a congressional scorecard and voter's guides at lc.org. That's short for Liberty Council.
I just looked through it. It's an excellent voter guide.
lc.org is where you can get that. All right, real quickly, if you'd like to come out to Courage to Stand, that's the 9th Annual Policy Awards Dinner for the Florida Family Policy Council. It is this Saturday. Carl Jackson is going to be the host. If you'd like to get tickets, go to flfamily.org. That's flfamily.org. And please don't forget to come out and join me or help me by co-sponsoring me for the Walk to End Alzheimer's at Lake Eola Saturday morning, the 18th. And I can use all the help I can get to raise some bucks, and I'll do all the walking. All you got to do is produce the dollars, okay? Walk to End Alzheimer's. Email me at Chris Hart at AmericanAdversariesRadio.com or give us a call at the show anytime when we're doing